Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 29 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Matt Bennett from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois. On Thursday morning, the United States Department of Agriculture updated the prospective plantings and grain stocks figures for the 2018 growing season. It now says that as of the survey that was taken in early March of farmers across the nation, they expect 88 million acres of corn to be planted, 88.98 million acres of soybeans, and 47.339 million acres of wheat. That would be all wheat. It was seen as a surprise, Matt Bennett, by the trade this morning, and they reacted by taking the corn and the soybean sharply higher. I suppose 14 cents and 26 cents, respectively, for corn and soybeans would be considered up sharply. What'd you think of the marketplace?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting. As soon as it got released, obviously, we had a pretty sharp run up. The first numbers I saw, first numbers I was looking for, of course, were the acreage numbers. But, you know, after I had a little bit of time and I looked at the stocks numbers, I thought, as the market surged higher originally and then it kind of pulled back, I wasn't too surprised because obviously 175 million bushel more corn on hand than what we thought. It was probably a little more than what most people would have wanted to see. But by all means, 89 million acres or sub 89 on soybeans is less by around a million under the lowest estimate, and then corn at 88, almost 88 flat, certainly is in a situation with kind of usage that we've seen that we're going to have to see pretty good weather, not only throughout the spring to ensure that we can generate 88 million acres, but through the summer, because we've had pretty good weather here the last several years. And so if we don't have ideal weather with only 88 million acres, it definitely could be an interesting market this summer.
Why do you think it is that the trade missed both the corn and soybean numbers by so very much? I think they were off on average by about 1.5 million acres for the corn and nearly 2 million acres for the soybeans.
I asked myself that same question this morning, Todd. I think, we most in the trade factored in about 180 million acre pie between corn and soybeans, and we came in at about 177. So my first question is, where did the 3 million acres move? Well, 1.3 million went to wheat, mostly spring wheat. The other acreage, there's about 857,000 increase in the deep south in the cotton acres. And then small grains accounted for about 500,000 acres there, which still left us short of about 1 million acres. And I found this interesting chart that NAS provided, 2018 principal crops, planted area. If you look at the total area in general of just planted acres down, 1.158 million acres across the Corn Belt in the area across the United States, that just surprised me. And to Matt's point, I think if that is true and we're not getting off to a very early start for planting corn in the Midwest with cooler temperatures, at least through the first half of April and above normal precip, you begin to wonder if the 88 million acres of intended corn acres will all get planted here moving forward.
So we've heard this often, Bill Gentry, about the northern part of the Midwest, the Dakotas, parts of South Dakota, maybe some of Minnesota, that prevent plant acres in years where it's cool and wet often show up. Is this something you're watching for?
Most assuredly. I think realistically, watching the acreage mix already with the numbers in March, and I do think that the June numbers will be watched really, really close. But yeah, I think the weather pattern is not really being all that helpful right now. It's too early to really get worried about it. And as we talked in our office today, most guys have pretty big equipment, so they can get stuff done in a hurry. So maybe we have a little bit of sensitivity to the issue, but it's really too soon to really make a case for it.
Did you make a different case at all for the grain stocks numbers? What did you see there, Bill?
The biggest thing that I see is looking at the stocks to use ratio. When you start projecting what the stocks to use ratio for corn could be down around 11%, down from 14.5 this last year, and the bean number exceptionally at 10.7%, down from about 13.5. Those two numbers really give me a bias that maybe the trade has kind of turned a corner. I don't know how. I have to watch the funds, and we'll see what those numbers are tomorrow night. But the fact of the matter is, will they really get bulled up and accumulate a lot of length? They've already been along the corn and the bean market. Can they cover their shorts in wheat so they can all three work in unison? That's going to be my thought to watch for the next couple of weeks. We've got reversal weeks to the upside in several markets. If we can see some follow through next week, I'd be very encouraged.
You have me wondering now, Bill, what you're using as ending stocks for the 2018-19 year, especially for soybeans. The corn number must be pretty low as well.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I've got the bean number at 18-19, right around 475. And for corn, the carryout number, I'd say you could dial it down to 1617, but I'm probably a little bit higher than that yet, especially considering the quarterly grain stocks that we saw today.
Brian Stark, have you rolled numbers out for the 18-19 season?
We have not, but I can't differ. I think most from what Bill said, I think that obviously the bean number gets a little tighter. But I would caution and say that if you follow the weather pattern, we tend to gain bean acres as we move along between now and June. So I guess that would be my bias. But somewhere in the upper 400 million area, I think, is a good projection. And as far as corn goes, I think you could easily be 2 billion or just slightly below by the time we get there if we maintain the acres we intend to plant today.
Matt, your ending stocks, have you figured yet?
I'm not going to differ a whole lot. I think that I'd probably be pushing 500 right now on soybeans because kind of like what Brian's saying, I guess I have the tendency to believe if I had to make a bet on which one of these is going to grow between now and June, obviously there's a lot of moving parts here, but it's forecasted to be a cool, wet spring. We're saturated in a good part of the eastern Corn Belt especially. There's a lot of areas that would like to get to rolling right now, and they're not. So that's probably going to mean that bean acres would grow. You know, again, if I had to bet, I would bet bean acres would grow, relatively speaking, more than what corn acres would grow. And so in that situation, yes, our usage is very good, but I think that we're still looking at maybe a 500 carryout, not to mention, you know, some of these concerns with China. I mean, we know that they're going to buy our beans. At least they're going to have to buy some of them. But, you know, if they decide they're not going to buy any more than what they absolutely have to, you know, we could be looking at this world situation continuing to tighten a little bit on soybeans while the U.S. situation shows more and more stocks. That's definitely a possibility that I think that could come to pass.
Bill Gentry, were you surprised that Ohio dropped its bean acreage by 250,000?
You know, I didn't get caught off guard for the numbers like that. I think realistically, it's going to be more of a weather situation, and those are projected numbers. As far as specific state-by-state numbers, I'm not a real mathematician, so it didn't really catch my attention. But I think realistically, just seeing the acres of all three commodities being down a little bit from expectations was really what got my attention.
Okay, Matt, I want to come to you for just a bit on this, and maybe to Brian Stark as well. I'm wondering where, and we can see this in the numbers, there were changes in the soybeans year over year, and why it differs from the perspective of the trade, which was thinking there would be so many more soybeans, especially out west. The trade was thinking that would be the case, mostly because they thought the bankers would be putting pressure on their producers. Apparently that wasn't the case. If you look out west, let's see, what, 250,000 less in Minnesota, no change in the Dakotas, down 50 in South Dakota, Nebraska off 100, Iowa down 200,000 acres as well, and Kansas was down, what, 250. So those numbers dropped. Do we have a good reason for why the trade was off on that? Was it just that the bankers weren't that involved, or that they use a different crop altogether than corn or soybeans?
Yeah, I think there's a variety of things going on. I don't think, you know, whenever you've got a survey-based approach, and then several of these different survey-based approaches actually coming in very close to one another, it's pretty interesting to see that those were all off. You know, I mean, most of these folks were off at 2.5 million acres of soybeans. And so, you know, one thing I'd caution you on, talking to some Kansas producers earlier this winter, you know, last year they had a huge switch into soybeans. And I think this year, seeing them go back away from soybeans somewhat is just simply a function of some of their rotation. And I think you get into a state like Iowa, like we were just talking the other day at the Outlook meeting I was with you on, you know, in Iowa, guys are going to plant corn traditionally. I mean, that's typically what they're going to plant. They seem to have better luck, relatively speaking, on corn than what they do soybeans from a production standpoint, first of all. And second of all, obviously, a lot of livestock and a lot of ethanol plants there. So, you know, I'm a little bit surprised that this bean number came in so low. I'm not gonna kid you one bit, but I do think that the bean number has room to grow, and I'm not so sure that I 100% I guess believe exactly what the survey says this time from the USDA. I think that it's early in the year, and I do think that moving forward, you're going to see this soybean acreage number grow, especially if this weather once again is as it's advertised right now.
Brian, I'd like you to follow up on that, but I'm just looking at both the corn and the soybean planted acres maps that USDA produces. Minnesota and Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas all have a reduction in both corn and soybean acres. That just seems amazing.
It is amazing. I kind of highlighted that earlier during the show when we were first talking. And I think if you look at the principal crops planted acreage, I think that's what drove the trade to be off on soybeans. And to Matt's point, I'm not convinced that more acres don't get planted, whether it's corn, beans, or small grains, depending on the state that you're in. But just take Illinois, for example. Corn acres down 200,000. Bean acres unchanged, wheat up 60. All right, what other principal crop do we necessarily plant? And you look at the principal area, we're down almost 145, 150,000 acres just in general. And I don't know today what that's going to. It's almost like, you know, we're not planting anything. And I think Iowa could be the same way. You're down 200,000 in beans, unchanged in corn. The principal acres are down 150. I think that explains a lot of why the trade was off in their estimates on soybean acres from where we came in, because there's a total of about 1.16 million acres that were down year over year that really don't have a crop that you can assign to, it appears to me. So I think some of that will change, and maybe a little bit of skepticism that we're going to lose that many acres in total that are not easily explained going to another commodity.
Now let's talk about the price of these two commodities. Was the jump today enough to satisfy the market? I know it was, because that's what happened. But Bill Gentry, is there more yet to come?
You know, I think there is some potential. I think with the tightening of the balance sheets, what we've really done is given the market a little bit more upside potential than we had going for or coming into today. But does it make me bullish? I really can't put that hat on right now. I'd like to think that maybe we can make new highs for the move, especially in corn. Wheat had an outside day up today, so there's some encouragement there, but it's still a pretty big down week. Beans had a nice reversal week to the upside. I think there's potential, but I think we're going to need more ammunition in order to make new highs from what we put in a couple of weeks ago. And I think realistically the weather card could be played before it's all said and done, but it's probably a little too soon. I'd like some of the dust to settle around the trade issues and see some of that stuff settle out in a favorable way, so we don't have to have that concern every day. And I think realistically, yeah, the charts do say there's some upside potential, but making new highs for the move is going to be the next hurdle. And I'm not sure we've got the ammunition to do it just yet.
You agree with that assessment, Brian?
I think, yes, I do. I think corn certainly has more upside potential given the weather pattern, given a lot of different situations today that we've already discussed. But beans, to me, I think is the wild card of how much higher they need to go. I think everyone's talked ad nauseum about Argentina's continued degradation of their crop. Brazil, on the other hand, continues to grow. Will they be able to offset a lot of that? For me, beans, the key for me isn't necessarily the acreage. I think that's the expectation. It presents a little more friendliness, the fact we didn't come in at 91, 92 today. However, I think the real catalyst is can we get some demand back on the export side? We've been way behind. We're projecting to carry out close to a half a billion bushels into September. So we've got cushion. In order for beans to make a run at 11 or higher, I think you're really going to have to see export demand start to recover. And that'll have to mean China comes back and starts buying more of our beans.
Any reason to believe that would be the case, even if there wasn't a trade dispute? That's the possibility.
I do, only because I don't think South America can maintain this rapid export pace to satisfy China's appetite for soybeans through August. So at some point in time, our bias is maybe it's mid to late summer, we'll get some market share back. Is it enough to catch up and grow our export demand number to pull the carryout down? Time will tell. But I do think, whether there's a trade situation or not, that we will get some increased share back, simply because I don't think South America's logistics will allow them to export this pace consistently the next 6 months.
Is that an infrastructure thing or producers holding on to beans?
I think a little bit of a combination of both. I would lean towards the latter, simply because in Argentina they use beans as an inflationary hedge. I don't think they'll be able to continue to push enough beans to the market to satisfy that export demand, more so probably than the infrastructure.
In your opinion, Matt, was today a better day for corn or for soybeans?
Well, I think for corn, I mean, if you're basically gaining around half of what you gained on soybeans, then you'd have to say that maybe it was a little bit better day for corn. But, you know, in reality, I think that a lot of folks were probably more surprised by soybeans, not only by the acreage number, you know, but by a really strong, sharp move higher. And so I think both of them had a good day. But I would say long term for me, and I'm going to reiterate some of what I said and some of what Brian, I think, has said just a little bit, is that, you know, this spells some good things for corn. There's reasons to believe that corn can go ahead and move higher. I'm not going to get wildly bullish by any means. In fact, I've been saying quite a bit lately, just because might have a little bit of a friendly bias towards corn doesn't mean that we're not selling some corn into this rally. But I think, you know, as far as today is concerned, what we did was, we know that at 88 million acres, if that would happen to be the number, you know, if we have to struggle to get to 88 because the weather is really tough this spring, you've got to think that there's going to be, due to that sort of spring weather pattern, a fair amount of support under the market, first of all. And then as you move into summer, I think there's a fair amount of pressure once again, just simply because, you know, whenever I look at the balance sheet, you know, as far as corn's concerned, if you plant 88 and you harvest 80 and a half, 81, you know, you're looking at 175 yield with the current demand projections. You know, you're still 175, 18. And so, you know, obviously that could be a pretty dicey situation if you would happen to be in that 170 range or below. And so now on the flip side, I don't know that anybody in the trade is going to believe a poor condition report this year, because last year we had poor condition report after poor condition report, and we still ended up with a 176.6 yield. But I will tell you that if we do have inclement weather this summer with 88 million planted, you're going to see a pretty dynamic market at times.
Hey, Bill Gentry, what should we make, if anything, that soybean acres now out number the corn acres? This is only the second time in U.S. history that that has happened. Third time, I suppose. Last time was in 1983. That was the whole farm set-aside year, and we can probably chalk it off. And I think Todd Hubbs told me the previous time was 1960, and I don't know why that would have been the case, but still, it just doesn't happen very often, Bill.
Yeah, I said it's been 34 years, so that's the first time in 34 years that beans were more than corn. You know, I think it takes some of the sensitivity out of the market a little bit and adds a little bit of sensitivity to the corn market. And I think it also gives the funds a little bit of a more of a bias. It maybe takes away some incentive for them to accumulate more length and maybe to allow them to extend their length in corn a little bit. So what I think is there's a little bit of a fulcrum there that allows the funds to participate a little bit differently. And I'm cautiously optimistic that they can basically resume their purchasing power and give us a little bit better price to sell into. It doesn't, like we've said already, we're not real bullish, But I do think that the landscape has improved significantly with these numbers. It'll be interesting to see how the USDA massages these numbers into the supply-demand report in a couple of weeks. So how we do that and how we move forward is going to be very key. But I do think the markets have a little bit more sensitivity or a little bit more skip in their step. And I think it's really kind of a constructive thing for corn and beans both.
Does it make sense, Brian, that there are more wheat acres this year than there have been in the past and or that the trade was expecting?
You know, that's a great question, Todd. From my perspective, I think given the economics that people have looked at, I think it's a surprise that we're a little bit higher on wheat acres. Obviously, we haven't seen many opportunities to sell $5 wheat. And I think ultimately when you look at bean economics in a lot of areas, specifically the area I know well, they tend to perform a little bit better than soft red winter wheat. And that's just one class. But I would say overall, it is a surprise. Given the fact that the marketplace was expecting maybe unchanged to slightly lower than last year.
We're farmers, and I'll ask you this, Brian. When they called in today, and I don't know where the Andersons stood on this, on pre-sales exactly, were they worried that they had too many soybeans sold now?
No, I don't think so. I think in general, if I had to gauge, the farmer in our area might be a third sold on his 2018 production. So he's still got a lot of opportunity to sell. Obviously, they're much more sold than they are on new crop corn. And I think today works out both ways. Maybe they wish they're a little bit less. But I think you have to look at the overall dynamic of what we've talked about during our conversation today is the fact that beans in general probably had the most potential bearishness down the road and may still do. And I think that's the commodity that most people, not only us communicating with our customers, but other analysts talking to people had encouraged people to make $10 sales to protect a $10 level because it's profitable. And obviously hoping that we'd get a better opportunity with corn, which right now we're starting to get that. And I think to the point of what Bill was saying earlier, for me, the exciting point of corn having some potential upside is that it's going to create a little more volatility in the market, which gives us more opportunity versus being range bound here in the last 6 to 8 months, or even going back the last couple of years where there's been limited opportunities. So people will be able to take advantage of other potential risk management solutions, such as if the market has a reason to rally, maybe buying calls makes sense. Maybe there's opportunity there. Not recommending that today, but just as an example of a strategy that if you don't have some volatility in the market, it's kind of hard to execute at a profit.
I've made note, Matt Bennett, that as we've talked, we've heard corn numbers and ending stocks for the 2018-19 or new crop corn well below 2 billion bushels, some 1.5 billion, 1.7 billion. That's an exceptional change. However, the numbers that have been bantied around for the soybean ending stocks for new crop are 470 million, 500 million, maybe a little bit plus. Those numbers, while off of the current carryout for this year, are really still pretty extraordinarily large, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. numbers are still rather large for the soybean carryout. You know, world numbers still large too, but obviously, as I said before, it looks like we may ratchet that back just a little bit. You know, we got to see how Argentina and Brazil end up coming out because people continue to ratchet up Brazilian production. But as far as the U.S. is concerned, you know, I think relatively speaking, yes, you're looking at a corn situation compared to the last couple, 3 years, you know, that definitely has more of a tighter feel to it. Whereas soybeans, there's no question because we were hand to mouth for several years in a row. And now all of a sudden you're looking at this year talking 555. You know, are we going to scale that back this next year to 500 or below 500? Maybe, but whenever we were used to running 200 or below for several years in a row, it certainly feels like we have a whole lot more beans on hand. And so I think a producer needs to take note of that, particularly, I mean, I guess, you know, sometimes we just need to keep it simple. When you've got November beans on the board settling anywhere close to 1050, and we're trying to figure out whether we should go ahead and make a bean sale or not. You know, and I'm talking about maybe someone who hasn't really sold much yet, because I know a lot of folks have been a little more lethargic. They want to try to get the most out of this better feel of the market that they've felt since the January report. But, you know, we need to not take too much for granted, you know, because a 1050 settled here going into this weekend, a little bit above. To me, that's one heck of a price. I don't want to ignore it. And by all means, thinking about all that we've been talking about from a stocks usage ratio standpoint, from an ending stock standpoint, if you can make money, why not make the sale?
What are the things, Brian Stark, and we've talked about some of them, probably all of them at this point, but maybe if you could list them off, what are the things that are positive and negative going forward from here? So I'm going to guess that weather could be both, and that trade could be both, but which way do they generally lean for you?
Weather, I would say, leans generally positive in my mind, given the deferred forecast right now. Trade, I would say, potentially slightly negative. That's how I'd categorize those two categories today. And then obviously, focused on the trade piece of watching our demand components, because that'll have a lot to do, along with weather, of where the markets are going to lead going through this growing season.
And what would you like to see farmers do before the planting season starts for them?
I mean, to Matt's point, I'm going to kind of piggyback off that on the new crop beans, because even with the 30-cent rally today, I'm really not changing my bias. I think we have to get away from price forecasting and start looking at where do we become good risk managers and locking in profit. And at 1050, I think most farmers can make a decent profit making some sales. So I think as the market gives us opportunity moving forward into the spring, especially if the weather forecast continues to delay us, that's what I would watch. I wouldn't be afraid of getting closer to 40-50% sold on new crop beans. And for me, that's the biggest piece of advice. And I think corn, obviously, we could be a little more patient on.
And Bill Gentry, where do you stand on these issues?
You know, I think we on the last run-up, we really crowded a lot of guys to get 50% sold in the beans and maybe try to get to that point. But I think realistically, when I look at the bottom line numbers, when I look at a demand base for corn that's 14.5 and a demand base for beans that's 4.5, you know, I think it's a really strong number. And realistically, that puts the burden of proof on the producer. And if we have any wobbles in the weather, I think the market could be exceptionally sensitive. And we just basically upped our game just a little bit today. So cross our fingers and hope for the best. But I think the market sensitivity just really has come to us for a nice marketing opportunity down the road, I hope.
And let's close it out with a final word from each of you. I think, Bill, I'll let you take some time here and talk about marketing plans going forward. You've discussed some of that, but how do you put it together given what you've already done in the marketplace?
I think realistically, and I heard it earlier in the conversation, I think the opportunity to maybe buy some call options for some market spooks down the road has definitely got onto the table today. Until this number was surfaced for me, I was really reluctant. I thought the weather could be a trump card down the road, but it really wasn't on the tip of my tongue or on my fingertips yet. I think it's a lot closer now. Soybeans, you know, I think weather is going to be key. But as Matt talked about earlier, maybe the possibility of some additional acres creeping into the mix, that's a little bit of a concern to me as well. So going forward, you know, I think the upside has been opened up, but it's not Pandora's box just yet. I think it's just the opportunity to present itself just improved significantly. So making some good value-based sales at these levels and higher, and then maybe looking at some calls down the road, it looks like a textbook mix.
Your final word, Brian Stark.
I would look at last year's December high, 417.25. I'd look at the DEIS 18 high at 429.5 last July. Use those levels as targets to put some orders to start layering in sales as we move higher. And obviously watch your weather to drive some of your marketing decisions, because it's going to have a big impact here moving forward into the growing season.
And Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I think that moving forward, we, again, like I said earlier, I've got a little more of a friendly bias for the corn market, at least supportive at the least. I know a lot of farmers are going to be lean and bullish. I understand that. Typically, we get bullish. You see the markets up strong going into a long weekend, and you're bullish. I mean, that's just the way that our minds work. But we also need to be disciplined enough to make some sales at profitable levels. we've got to be able to get serious about our marketing plan and base that marketing plan on some realistic break evens. And so I'm just like these guys. I want to, you know, go ahead and get sales on the books whenever it makes good sense. I do think that this summer there's going to be some opportunities. So I want to stay flexible, but by all means, I want to sell into the rally. Keep a level head. Let's not try to market like we're going to hit the high this year, because we haven't done it very many times before. Probably won't do it again this year. Bottom line, if we make money, we're going to have a good year.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, including Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.